Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Adventures in Design. Tony Mendez is with me this morning, as well as some other Circle of Trust members, as we are kicking off a new series over on AID. WYFP, what's your fucking problem, right? Because if the world isn't short of one thing, it's fucking problems. Tony Mendez, thank you for being a longtime Circle of Trust member. Thank you so much for hanging out with me now. You were one of the first adopters, right? Is this now 7 summers we've spent together in the Circle of Trust?
Yeah, it sure has been. Yeah, seven summers. I was there before COTO started.
So the eighth summer.
I subscribed right away.
The eighth summer, which was like AID AM, like suitcase in a dream, right? Like Bricky just trying to figure it all out.
Yeah, I was there for all the growing pains, and I've stuck with it because it's been legit and it's been a ride. Honestly, doesn't that feel like a lifetime ago?
It 100% does. And when you think about how much the world of posters and business and design and media and politics and technology, like 8 years in our lifespan seems like 80 years in our parents' lifespan. You know, like you look at my dad at my age, 8 years goes by and he goes, you can now watch one thing on one station and record something on the other station. And that was the big breakthrough, right? For 8 years at my old man's time span. And our 8 years, it's like, yo, cars drive themselves.
Pretty much. Yeah. There's not a whole lot of, or like Netflix or stuff on demand.
Sure.
No more VHS tapes. It's all streaming.
The idea of the new show is to hang out once a week with members of the Circle of Trust, record an episode that we release out to everybody, but to really do hopefully what becomes a fun show where people can, you know, come up with very creative, not realistic problems just for the fun of it. But I was thinking about it, you know, the world has gone so far so fast since we started this, and there's not really... I mean, there are people that I, you know, let me just pause right here. When I first started doing Adventures in Design in 2012, is that right? Yeah, 2012. That's right. Cause we're getting ready to hit 10 years. When I first did it, there was like a pool of freelancers, a pool of corporate people, and then there was a pool of like sort of top tier folks that had seemingly figured it out from the outside. And me and my co-host then, Billy, we were in that last category of it looked like we had it figured out. We started doing the show, and then everybody quickly realized nobody had it figured out. But as we go fast forward, those three categories are now very, very blurred, right? There's a lot of people that kind of have one foot in each one of those three different tiers. There's a lot of people that have amazing corporate jobs, but are also kind of doing these freelance careers that look like that's all that they do. And then you talk to them like, yeah, I also work for Philip Morris. You know what I mean? There's just like so many people that are juggling a lot of different things. So I don't really know if the old business model of bring somebody on, talk about how great things are going. It feels like you're only ever able to get a conversation that is completely applicable to like a small percentage of the audience. So the idea is to have lots of quote unquote your peers on, and maybe in this show we can hit lots of different touch points, lots of different people at lots of different places, and get a little bit of a community conversation going. Because the one thing that I feel like has sort of dissipated over the 8 year run, or almost 10 year run of AID, is Tony, you were back in the day when there were less people, stronger community. Now there's more people in the creative space, but the community feels very fractured, very spread out. And it's not the same thing where there were like 50 people slaying it and 500 people knew who those 50 were. There's now 5,000 people slaying it, and roughly everybody knows two or three of those names.
Yeah, it's weird because I got into the poster scene through a lot of people, same way. Espresso beans was my gateway drug.
Does that still exist?
It still exists, but it is dead. Like there's no, pretty much no movement on it. Nobody really talks on there anymore.
Yeah.
But that was it was a forum that everybody would talk about the new poster art, whether it was gig posters or movie posters. And then obviously, you know, it kind of exploded once Mondo kind of came on the scene, and there was this huge push for new stuff, alternative stuff. What's cool, what's in, and then it eventually became how much is it worth, what's it going to sell for. And then once that kind of all boiled over. Now it's just kind of, it's just like you said, it's fractured.
Yeah.
I made a lot of friends through that I'm still friends with today, that I talk to regularly, which is great. But it's totally different. I would say, in general, that whole scene that I was a part of back then, from 08 to now,
yeah,
it's pretty much gone. I mean, it's there, but it's not what it was, you know, a few years ago. So it's weird. Yeah. It's definitely like you forge these relationships, and I guess the ones that you're, you know, you're fond of, you'll stick with. But I feel like for the most part, it's just everything got quiet, that the tempo has slowed down. There's still good art that's being made, but it's few and far between. It's a lot of the same stuff out there. So it's weird. We're in a weird, and it's like anything. Like, there's always ebbs and flows, and I think at some point it'll be huge again, like, yeah, it once was. But
sure,
right now we're in that down phase. So,
well, the one thing that could make it all big again, well, you know, that specifically that poster scene, and what I believe originally brought people into the gig poster scene was, you know, we were at a moment where technology was really liberating designers, and that fusion of, are you an illustrator or are you a graphic designer, was sort of really becoming the way that a lot of people's careers were going. And the technology was really embracing that, because there was so many different ways that you could quote unquote be a poster artist. But the thing that it had in common was it looked from the outside like, hey, these are people that are being really, really free with their creative talents. There's either no client involved, or client involved that, you know, in our instance, wasn't really allowed to say anything. You know, it's like, hey man, you're not paying me enough to fucking art direct me. You know, if you want to treat this like a real job, let me send you over a contract. But if this is, you know, $500 and 50 posters and, you know, a handshake deal, then you're going to get handshake, you know, guidance on how I handle today's project. But I think what could happen again is if the concert industry booms, if people are ready to get back to living, there could be a whole portal that gets opened up for bands and theaters and you know, all kinds of organizations that put on live entertainment trying to go double time. After a year of sitting on the bench, you know, I was talking to DKNG when we had them on, and they were talking about, like, yeah, the gig poster jobs are starting to flow again, and flowing for tours that aren't necessarily even book formulated. Bands just know that they need to make, you know, a large amount of money, because they made no money last year. So it could come back together again. But when we look at it, like, what's the problem? How did everything get so fractured? And I love that we're talking about this, because this is just completely off the cuff. A couple of things. Too many people got into it, which is a bittersweet thing, because you want a lot of people to enjoy that and to find that freedom. But saturation does have a dangerous side effect. Too many people got into it, so it was hard to be a scene. It was hard to keep up with the scene. The scene got fractured. Like, well, these fucking guys think this way, and these people do their work this way. And, you know, so it became tribal, which is a human thing. But I also feel like Mondo, in the poster section, they started putting out too much too quick, and a guy like you could no longer collect them all, right? Like, I feel like Mondo put out so much stuff because the audience was there and things were selling out, and they went that cycle of baseball cards and Beanie Babies, where you've got customers lined up, and it, you know, it's the worst spot to be in business, even though it's the best spot to be in business. We can't make enough for these people, but if we make too much, we lose some of these people. And then I think the third way that it got broken, so we've already blamed the designer, which is too many designers got into it. We blamed one of the biggest clients, Mondo, for making too much. But hey, if you're a fan, if you're, you know, a consumer, and you think that, well, they ruined it for us, fuck you. You're guilty too, because the commissions also, I think, were a big thing that started killing it. When the fans said, we'll get together, we'll pull some money together, and we'll hire our favorite guy to do something for our favorite movie, that went outside of the law. And so each one of these factors, too many designers, too many movie posters, too many like high budget posters, and then just the wild west of the fans just being like, well, we hired a guy as a mercenary to make this for us because goddamn it, my flat file needs it. I think those three factors is what flooded it and broke it. So if we reverse engineer it, if it gets really, really quiet, and a couple of people go back in, bands go back on the road, it could have a renaissance.
there was a time when I was like, oh man, these posters are really cool. I'd gotten into Mondo like around 2008. And there was a time when I was like, you know what? I'm going to buy every single one of these movie posters because I was like, these are really cool.
Yeah.
And that was the plan for a little while. And then it got to the point where I was just like, no, I can't keep up with this. But yeah, for all of those reasons that you mentioned, that is why we are seeing the downturn that we're seeing. I also want to add that obviously this isn't just Mondo's fault, but it is. Obviously, they got some competition. A couple other companies stepped up.
Yes.
To fill that pop culture 100%. Void, like Bottleneck Gallery.
100%.
Obviously, Gallery 1988's always been there.
Well, and that's what I was going to say, because that turd of a gallery, 1988, that motherfucker's just slaying, and he doesn't have to get anything licensed. Because he's going, well, the artists love Back to the Future, so they did a Back to the Future show, so I'm just the poor gallery owner. And boy, I had that guy called us a scumbag for a long fucking time, and I was so happy to see his life fall apart last year, because, you know, you can only fucking abuse so many people over the long haul before it comes back and bites you in your ass. Jensen Karp! Fucking scumbag. Scumbag rich guy taking advantage of the poor artist and playing poor himself the whole way through it. Oh, did I love watching that fall apart.
With Topanga, no less, his wife.
But...
Port Topanga.
But you know, we use Mondo as sort of Kleenex or Photoshop, right? A brand name that became representative of an entire industry. But yeah, a lot of people saw the money they were making. Yeah, I think the big one was, I think it was one of those Ollie Moss timed editions where everybody pulled out their calculator and said, wait a minute. They sold, what was that, Tony? I know that it was like,
I could tell you which one. It was when Ollie did the Dark Knight movie.
Dark Knight Rises.
It was a timed edition.
Yeah.
And I want to say it was like close to 5,000 posters that they ended up printing on that.
But at,
and that was the
100 each?
Yeah, I want to say it was like, no, I want to say it was like $70, $70 or $75 for that poster.
I just remember everybody running the monkey math and just being like, these motherfuckers just made like $400,000 on a poster. And you knew that as soon as that happened, I smell money. And then, you know, because the gallery model is just bullshit anyways. Like, one of the best businesses that the internet has crippled is the gallery model. You know what I mean? We're going to do nothing, but yet take half of your hard work. And I mean, if that goes away completely, I'll be so happy, because every artist should just be saying retail's dead. You can rent a space for next to nothing. People love the idea of limited edition, you know, flash pop-ups, that type of thing. Like, if you are a Jason Edmonston level artist, and I know not everybody's at the Rich Kelly, Jason Edmonston, you know, type of level, and you do a gallery show, it just says to me, I hate money. I don't want all the money. That's what it says to me if you do a gallery show. But anyways, Tony, I do feel like that was one of those moments when it got all crazy. And, you know, I don't want any of the... I want to backtrack for just a second. If you worked for Gallery 1988 and they helped you improve your career, good for you. I don't think you took a good business deal, but good for you if you're able to empower yourself for that. But shame on Gallery 88 for their business model. And in fact, do you remember when I snuck a poster in there? Remember when I tested the limits and I did my North by Northwest poster and I actually put Alfred Hitchcock's name on there and I put the title block on there, and then they sent me back the email, goes, whoa, you went too far. We can't show this online, but we'll still sell it in the store. And I did that on purpose just to see when will they actually say no, because I kicked the tires on it and said, this is an illegal setup. This is a complete illegal setup. But once again, I was raised in the Fugazi days where the worst thing you could be called would be a sellout. And now the coolest thing you can do if you're a kid is sellout. Oh my God, do you see my favorite TikToker, or did you see my favorite YouTuber? They sold out. They're so fucking cool because they sold out. So selling out is the coolest thing you can do. And just stealing IP is the greatest thing that you can do if you're a designer these days. So, you know, I'm old man Bricky, raised on a bunch of laws and rules that nobody gives two fucks about anymore, Tony Mendez. Today's episode is brought to you by our friends over at GarmCompany.com. Head over to the new website and shop away. Coupon code SiteWide AID will save on everything. And I want to tell you about the new Growcase Big Book of Inspiration Special Edition logos, emblems, and crests. That's right. This is a smaller book, but it's curated down to just over 200 really, really great logos and marks that have illustrations and compositions that will make your next job so much easier. And it's at the low price of $22 if you're a jerk out in the public. But if you're listening to AID, hit in there the AID coupon code and you will save 20% off of it. It's a really cool book. I have it digitally on my desktop, and I'm going to be making a lot of covers using some of these logos just to show people that this isn't a cheat, but it's a shortcut to get to your ideas even faster. Okay, today's episode on WYFP, the idea was, what's one good thing that you lost over the pandemic year, and what's one good thing that you earned? Tony Mendez, since you're acting as my co-host by being the first to show up this morning, what is the best thing that you got rid of last year, and what is the best thing that you earned this year? I have a feeling I know what your earned is, but let everybody at home know how you survived and made out like a bandit from 2020.
Okay.
Okay.
Basically, well, here, I was going to start off with, I was actually going to bring the show down, and I actually did have a IRL personal anecdote I wanted to share.
Please do.
Of the best thing that I lost, because I could tell you in a heartbeat, I know exactly what it was. January of last year, I went to Walt Disney World, and I went with a woman.
Yeah.
And we were kind of, I was like in the middle of a relationship, it was long distance.
You were?
Yeah.
I didn't know this.
I was planning on moving out there.
No.
And the day I flew home was the day that LeBron James died. And I remember, like,
hold on, LeBron James died.
Yeah. Or no, but I,
is LeBron James is alive, dude. There's some holes in this story.
The basketball guy,
Kobe Bryant.
Kobe Bryant. Sorry, Kobe Bryant. I had LeBron in my mind. Kobe Bryant. So Kobe died that day.
No offense, Tony, but now I'm having a hard time believing that this girl really exists.
Yeah, she lives in Canada. It's fine. That was the day Kobe died, but she dropped me off at the airport and everything was good. And then the pandemic happened, and then what went from like daily nonstop texting and calls and everything, and just slowly just went to a slow drip. And I could still talk and I could still, but I could tell something was up.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty positive that she's, and the thing is like, I don't have Facebook or anything anymore. And it's not my way to like be creepy and stalk people. And
good
I also
you.
Don't want to be intrusive.
Good for you.
Just because I know how different people are affected during the pandemic.
Yeah.
So I just kind of, you know, chalked it up to, it is what it is. But in the back of my mind, and I'm pretty 100% positive, I think she got back together with her old boyfriend. So I'd lost a relationship, and it's probably bummed me out the most this whole time. Just because, like I said, it's not completely 100% dead. We've talked and everything. In fact, the last time I went out to Walt Disney World, she was going to see if she could try to make it out to see me, and then it didn't work out. So that was the biggest and best thing that I lost, because wow. I felt like going into January 2020, sky was the limit. I was like, I'm going to move out here.
Yeah.
I'm going to fucking, like, I'll go work at Walt Disney World. I don't care. I'll do whatever I could do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So wow. I had all these like expectations, and then it was like the pandemic happened, and then everything went to a grinding halt. And then here we are. But I will say in the meantime, I was lucky enough to be able to work from home. I just hunkered down, and I mostly interacted pretty much exclusively with my family. I kept in touch with my friends long distance or just through texts, emails, whatever. So I can't really complain because I'm healthy and I came out on top. I saved a ton of money. I have more money than I've probably ever had in my life, which is amazing. And then in the middle of that, I've been working more on my art stuff and getting more and more confident. So it's like it went from the ultimate like awesome ending to the most bummer ending. And then it's slowly like rebounding. And I find that as I'm working on my art and getting more confident and putting more stuff out there, that it is helping. And that obviously now we're able to travel again. I just got back from Walt Disney World again.
Yeah, you did. Renewed that pass.
But that whole trip, like, it was weighing on me of like, man, I was here a year ago. Yeah. Everything was awesome.
And
now it's weird.
Not for nothing, but if you would have had that girl with you this time, you were all juiced up from a mutual friend of ours that was like ripping you through Club 33 stuff. So you would have been big man on campus, be like, hey, you roll with Mendez. This is the type of life you're going to get used to. The Chicago Mafia luxury that is the signature mark of Tony Mendez. Tony, you said something in there that is the best advice you can give anybody. First off, if we look at your year, it's a perfect three-act story, right? Movie starts out, guys in love, pandemic hits, loses the girl, in the middle of like everybody being separated, goes through heartbreak. But you got back on the horse and you rode again, which goes to show that like when times get rough, when the heart is broken or the world is upside down, whichever one you went through, and some people like you went through both of them last year, our talents, our creativity, when you are illustrating or designing or making music or recording a YouTube video or a podcast, when you've got that creative part of your brain going, it shuts up that doubtful part of your brain, that sad part of your brain. Like I did a lot of illustrating last year, probably the most illustration that I've done in years, because I realized when I had the iPad Pro in front of me, Procreate opening, the little voice, it's like, you made it to the end of human civilization. That guy shut up, right? Like, it's a Saturday and you have to stay home. Like that voice would go away as long as I kept illustrating and drawing stuff. So I do absolutely love that in my mind, like the only way I know how you get over something is to just push through and keep your brain distracted. And if you think about it, for every hour that you stay distracted, you just avoided an hour of going more and more in the minutiae of whatever's bothering you. So the less you think about it, the more time your heart and brain has to heal. So in many ways, being creative and going down that path is the resistance or the resilience that you need to be like, it doesn't hurt as much anymore. I'm not as stressed out as I was anymore because I made something that kept me busy, sharpened my school skill set. We all do whatever we find to be challenging because it's that creative challenge that we love. And then the reward is that when you upload it or post it or whatever it is that you, Tony, specifically make or anybody who's listening makes, then there's that nice little reward of maybe you get paid for it because it was a client project, or maybe you sell it because it's a personal project, or maybe it's just somebody over on Instagram that just writes you such a beautiful DM. It's like, man, I need to get back more into drawing, and you're killing it. And I remember your first couple of illustrations you put up, and months later, man, you're getting so much better. Or maybe it's somebody like Edmonston, because I know Edmonston has pulled you aside a couple of times and been like, Tony, you've got real talent here. And just hearing somebody who's, you know, one of the higher professionals, you know, one of the best in the business during our lifetime, pull you aside and say, hey, you've got some talent here. Keep polishing this diamond and it's going to shine. Those are the things that make you be like, that broad's missing out because Mendez is going back to the park and I'm all juiced up with my friend and I got them 33 privileges.
Yeah. The getting the magic back was a huge factor of finally, not Disneyland, Disney World. I had to go to Disney World first to get my fix. But even that was enough to really get my creative juices flowing. Yep. And just, you know, it made me feel better. Emotionally, I just felt, even though it was weird and the mass situation and the crowds and everything, emotionally for me, just being back in that park really did wonders for me. And I can't wait to go back out to the Disneyland in July and do it all over again. So yeah, it's definitely, things are definitely on an upswing.
That's great. I love hearing that. And I really think that is the best way to get over things is just to keep pushing. And I know that in the beginning it can be hard and it can be confusing, but I mean, that's how I've always looked at life, is that you have a decision to make. Be a victim or be a survivor. And I've never really liked that first option. I've never thought that that was an applicable option to be like, well, I'm just going to let this hold me back. It's like, fuck that, man. Just, you know, keep moving forward, keep moving forward. You don't even realize sometimes how much progress you've made. Because I was, you know, feeling bad that I was away with my family last week. So I sat down. I'm like, I need to tell everybody that the show's back on Tuesday. Because if I come back on Memorial Day, that's just dumb. Nobody will listen. Then everybody's behind. And so I had the idea that I wanted to launch this for Wednesdays. And I wanted to let everybody know the show's back on Tuesdays. And I said, all right, AID summer season's kicking off. And then I went, 2015? And I counted it up. I'm like, whoa, this is going to be 7 years of hanging out with some of these people for the summer. Like, I don't sit down and look at all the dates. Like, I just realized not too long ago when I was talking to Violent Gentlemen about their 10-year anniversary. I'm like, oh, yeah. January 2022 will be the 10-year anniversary of uploading the first episode of AID. Like, you know, you don't even realize how far you've gone until sometimes you're kind of forced to look back. Joining us now, we have our friend Craig Kilgore coming to us from the, I'm not going to say the great state of Indiana, but it's a state. And he's coming to us from the tippy top. He spent the pandemic working at Costco, I believe. And helping out people, making sure that they could get massive amounts of toilet paper and paper towels, and just seeing the worst part of humanism, the consumptionism, the mass hoarding of, man, I ain't going to go through this thing without 80 gallons of ketchup. If I ain't got 80 gallons of ketchup, go ahead and kill me, Obama. So, Craig, question back to you. Over the last year, what's the best thing that you got rid of? What's the best thing that you gained, my friend? Or hit me up if you got a different fucking problem.
Well, yeah. When I saw this morning you guys were doing this, the one that popped in my head was this the option to share what question you have that nobody else seems to have the answer to. But I'll answer your question. I mean, I they go to kind of hand in hand. Like, I was struggling. Like everybody, you know, you're kind of indoors, you weren't doing much. Yep. And I had a lot of time to look at kind of what I was finding for inspiration, what I was finding as like prior things like cultural references or books or shit you've been into, and really questioning, hey, what does that say? What's your things? And becoming more self-referential, becoming comfortable with being self-referential and what you're exploring and sharing with other people. That's probably what I got most out of the pandemic. Why I wanted to join the call and the conversation was more like, what the fuck's going on right now and in the future, what we're facing once it's over. But
all right, well, let's do the first part first. So the thing that you got out of this last year is, you, if I'm hearing it correctly, you've always loved to go into culture and to sort of research like the forensics of creativity. But in the last year, you learned how to share that.
Well, more actually trust looking at yourself and looking inside. I remember back in the day, you used to have like Chris Parks on a lot, like Real Horse, like some of the stuff he was talking about. What
Hey, is it time to bring Chris back on the show? You tell me and I'll send that email. All right, let me write it down right now. Book Chris Parks. And if you don't know who Chris Parks is, and your Circle of Trust member, go back and listen to his episodes. But he works under the name of Pell Horse, which is a biblical reference. And his goal was, when people search Pell Horse, I want to be higher than the Bible in the search query. And he made that goal. So what a great goal to have. But Chris Parks is a traveler of space and dimension, who has done those planned ayahuasca retreats where you shit and puke in a bucket, but then you also travel into another dimension. He also learned how to do, what is that dreaming called, where you control your dreams? He's basically in the AID universe. He's our Doctor Strange.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
So, is something that you got more into, not doing hallucinogens, but more into the research.
Well, I've been on a path, not exactly similar, but a lot of his story resonated back when I heard about it first, because I've been part of the AID kind of circle of trust for a while myself.
Yeah. You've been around for a long time.
So a lot of those earlier episodes, you know, I would always find little chicken nuggets, like you say, and, you know, follow them. And that bread trail actually was why I wanted to join today, because today I was reading, this morning, I've been reading a book since you guys had, it was one of the DKNG shows recently, I think it was in April, that you guys talked about that Van Neistat video that Generational. Yeah.
Yeah, where we played Van Neistat over on YouTube, Casey Neistat's older brother, who I think inspired way more of Casey Neistat than we were aware of. He released a video where he basically broke down a book that said that the human cycle is an 80-year cycle divided up into four 20-year, like, stories, basically, or chapters. And, you know, it happens to co-align with the typical human life is around 80 years if, you know, things go your way. Mm-hmm. I think if you live past 80, you're fucked, man. Like, you don't want to stay too long at the party, including the party of life, right? Like, but anyways, we played this and then we broke it down. And man, oh man, for a minute, I almost thought that I wanted to read that book. But then I reminded myself that meant that I would have to read a book. So I figured that I was better with a 10-minute YouTube video.
Yeah. So I watched the video after hearing that episode, but I did buy the book. I'm about 2/3 away from it. Today, I've been barreling through because it is pretty academic. It wasn't a light read, or it hasn't been, but it kind of goes to that idea, that self-referential, like working at Costco, a lot of the people I work with are millennials and Gen Z.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing how, you know, I'm about your age. I'm actually,
we don't need to say it.
No need to say it, but I'm seeing, okay, so what do I have to contribute going ahead?
Sure.
Especially if some of this the fourth turning thing is, that because I don't believe that the crisis that this book talked about is really what we just went through. I think it's something else to come. And in that episode, I re-listened to it, and you talked about climate a little bit and other things, but it's something. It's not going to be a war, but there's. So I'm looking at, okay, like I think we'll go through it, and then we're going to have a period of like great times. But what can I contribute as a something Gen Xer? And that's kind of what that self-referential idea kind of was that it kind of started exploring. You know?
Do you think this was inspired by the loneliness of the last year? Like, you know, I know that you were able to go to work, but you weren't able to go out and see friends. You weren't able to go to a bar. You know, Thanksgiving, you're stuck with people you live with. Like, do you think it was inspired by loneliness?
Up here in Indiana, there wasn't really a lot of – there was stuff that was closed, but it wasn't as bad as whatever. I even went down around
– what a fucking place.
I went down to Georgia at Christmas time for their runoff election. Like, I worked a little bit on the as a volunteer in the election in November.
Yeah, I remember you saying
and
that.
And when I saw that we had a chance, when I say we, I'm a blue guy.
Yeah.
To have an impact of the Senate, you know, I volunteered and went down for 2 weeks to Georgia.
Yeah.
From December to January. And seeing kind of what a shit show it was down there. I mean, it was kind of like I'd opened my eyes to, you know, the things we've been hearing about how other parts of the country are dealing with it.
So you're telling me, let me break this down, Craig. You're telling me you went to Georgia and they were taking the pandemic more serious than where you live.
Oh, hell no. No.
Oh, no. So they were more.
It was more that was the first I saw people like without masks walking around the bar areas.
Got it.
I was in Macon for the 2 weeks, Macon, Georgia.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And it was just like, part of it, I thought there'd be more of a community around the actual helping with the election, you know, the runoff thing. And it really was isolating down there. I felt kind of, I went out and tried to connect with local people, but it was still, and I was going door to door. Part of what I was doing was doing a kind of get out the vote kind of thing. So you go
and making people aware of what it actually is on the what's on the line and if their vote can actually change a lot of things.
Yeah, but going to people and making sure that they were registered. I went to nursing homes during this time.
Oof.
Like, and I was like, shit, you know, like, okay. I kind of like took a deep breath and I'm like, all right, I'm going to do this because I want to have these people have the chance to vote. Because a lot of people were, they had a absentee ballot that was rejected because their signature didn't match what was on their driver's license.
Right.
So I was going to like nursing homes.
Can you imagine that?
With older people.
Can you imagine that you're in such bad shape that you have to live in a nursing home so somebody will walk you to the toilet and wipe your ass and somehow you can't get your signature to match up from when you were able to drive a vehicle, say, a decade ago? It's mind-boggling that those signatures wouldn't be, you know, an exact replica of each other, like silkscreen prints.
Right. Yeah. So I was faced with some of those kind of things where I was seeing the people that like because where I'm at, most of the big outbreaks were at nursing homes early on. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of like, but I did it anyway. I didn't get any kind of symptoms or anything afterwards either, but I'm glad I did it. But it was an eye-opening thing when you see that it's not just how your own area is dealing with it, you know, part sure. of the country.
Sure. I mean, it was a really, really wild year, and it's hard to know exactly what's happening when you're stuck at home and you only know mm-hmm. what your neighborhood or city feels like, you know? And it's like,
right.
of course, if you're going to set, and you know, even the news that I prefer to watch, of course, if you're making content, I know what sells. You're going to put a camera in the worst spot possible because that helps your argument. You know, you're mm-hmm. not, you're not going to show like, check it out. All these people have been in their houses for the last 3 months. You're going to find the fucking party boys that are like out in their side yard playing horseshoes. And that's who you're going to interview. Like, cause that tells the mm-hmm. best story. And so you don't really know what's going on until you get out there. Once I was fully vaccinated, I flew out to North Carolina to see my family. And I was like, whoa, wow. California is pretty gnarly on how strict and how serious this was taken, because in North Carolina, it just didn't seem like anybody really gave a fuck, you know, like the mask starts below the nostrils, you know, and it was just because it was taken really, really serious where I live. And a lot of people here didn't enjoy that. And they felt like their rights would be taken away. And I was just doing the monkey math on like, let's just work together and smash this thing and it could be gone forever. And now I wonder if it will be gone forever. And Craig, you talk about that book where they talked about the 20-year chapters. I'm not sure that this is over yet. You know what I mean? Like, it's right now, everything's happening at such a fast pace and it just feels too good to be true. And because there's a lot of, you know, people that were vaccinated as babies, then those vaccines kept them healthy their entire life. But they're refusing to do this, even though they'll eat processed foods and, you know, drink Slurpees and all kinds of synthetically made things that they have no idea what they're really consuming. But this they don't want to do. And there are a lot of countries that are in peril. It seems to me that this virus could morph into something that's even more serious. So I don't even know that this chapter is over yet. But yeah, there's definitely big things on the horizon. So for you, it seems to me that, because I'm having a hard time putting my finger on what it was, the best thing you got out of it. Was it self-awareness?
Well, I mean, I don't want to be abstract about it, but it's kind of like the idea that you can actually, it sounds a little foofy, but, you know, listening to what's in your heart versus what's in your mind, you know, like that idea of, because I'm more of an analytical person. So that mind thing was how I'd approach a lot of life. And, and I'm a introvert too. So it wasn't hard for me to be indoors or be,
to be separated,
segregated to your house for most of the time. Yeah. That wasn't a big stretch, but still, there's that. But so during that time period, I really put an effort into, and other people helped me, through, kind of sessions I'd be doing, online and on phone through talking with people. Kind of working through and listening more to the heart and how that works in your everyday life and trusting how that works in relationships and et cetera, et cetera. Cause that's, if you're an analytical in your head person, that's sometimes a hard thing to do.
Yeah. It goes completely,
or a lot of times a hard thing to do.
Yeah. It goes completely against how you problem solve, right? Like you look for hard math, not like an instinct, you know, some people are all instinct and have never looked at the math of their life. I think it'll work. I looked at your finances. I don't know if it is, but they believe that it is and they go for it. And you know, sometimes they accomplish huge things. And sometimes it's like, man, I wish I just had a drop of your self-confidence. I showed Beth this creator I found over on YouTube and I go, this guy's self-confidence is unmatched because he has little to no talent, but it has never stopped him from thinking he can do whatever he wants and uploading it to the internet. Like he released a music video that's 2 minutes long and he talked for 5 minutes about the inspiration for the music video. Craig, the music video is the worst thing you've ever heard. And it does not need a behind the music, you know, VH1 behind the music explaining this horrendous 2 minutes that he just went through. And I look at this guy and I go, just to have that self-confidence. And Beth was sitting on the couch. She goes, please turn this off. I can't watch another second of it. And her response, her best review was like, no woman's ever had that much self-confidence. She's like, that's a man thing. No woman has ever had that much self-confidence in the history of self-confidence.
Well, Do you remember the name? I'm going to look it up now.
I'm purposely not saying it because I'm being so brutal talking about the new Dave K video. So this is the thing, Craig. I love that you learn to follow your heart more. And you said you're an introvert. But to me, it seems that extreme introvert, you know, like you've shied away from people by your own decision. You know, oh, I'd rather stay home than go out and party. But do you think this last year, because you were forced into it and it wasn't your decision to make to stay away from people and it was a more extreme version of seclusion than you'd done in the past, do you think that that made your heart hurt, therefore you had to pay more attention to it? Like, do you think even an introvert last year could suffer from loneliness?
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. And I was never, if it's a spectrum, I was never on an extreme side of introvert.
Sure.
But it's a thing where, before I was an engineer for 20 years.
Yeah.
Before my period of what I'm doing now in Northern Indiana. And that was more of a path that kind of didn't just happen, but it was pushed. I didn't follow that heart thing. And now with this next phase of my life, especially now that this turning thing, potentially that's why I'm interested in it. Like, it's signaling this new thing and it correlates a bit with everybody's lives. And I want to make this next and the later parts matter more in a different way than the first parts did, in a more heartfelt way.
The thing that really resonated with me with that Van Neistat video about the turning was, before I had seen that video, one day in the middle of a pandemic depression, I ran the numbers and I was like, you know, if you were born, let me figure out what the numbers were. Cause I figured this out one day. Give me a second to do the math so that it's accurate. It's hard to do math and be entertaining at the same time. Some would say it's hard for me to be entertaining too. I did the math and I'm like, so if you were born like around 1930, right? 30s were kind of like dog shit. 40s were kind of weird, but the 50s were a sweet spot. So you're going to be 20. You're going to be dating. You're going to be out and about in the 50s, which the 50s, people started making money. You could buy a house and work at a gas station. You could buy a vacation home if you worked at the gas station. So you're in the 50s and you're getting your shit together. Then in the 60s, you know, the music gets good. The art gets real wild. 70s, you're just fucking. You're going to key parties in your neighborhood. Like, everything's great. 70s, peak fun. Most amount of technology with the least amount of rules that will ever exist is the 70s. 80s, things get conservative, but you're now becoming a little bit of an old fuck. 90s, technology's kind of popping, which is making your old life even better. You make it to the 2000s, you never thought you'd do that. 2000s, you get to see the internet, you can talk to your grandchildren through FaceTime, like, it's pretty cool. And then sometime around 2010, you die. I'm like, that's the perfect time to be born in the 30s and to die in the 10s. That's the perfect timeline. And I didn't even realize it. And when I watched that video, I'm like, oh, I already ran the math. The perfect time was to be born 1930, die 2010. Like, I already ran the math. And when I came up with this conclusion, it was based on living 80 years. So when I saw that video, I'm like, holy shit, I actually randomly had this idea one day, because I was trying to do the monkey math on, like, over the last 100 years, which would have been the best timeline to have lived in. And so when I saw that video, it really, really resonated with me. Hey, everybody, thank you so much for listening to today's show. Everybody who's on the show are members of the Circle of Trust. Hope you're enjoying what you're hearing. Coming up in part two, we're going to talk to more COT members, get around to what their problem is, as well as keep going on today's topic. And I would love to know, wherever you live, listen to this, hit me up. Let me know, what is the best thing that you lost? And what is the best thing that you gained? And I haven't even shared mine yet because I've been so enthralled in the conversation over here. If you want to hear part two of today's episode and 1,300 other episodes, head over to AID.network. And we're going to be recording these every Tuesday, dropping them on Wednesday for you to listen to. So if you want to be a part of the conversation, we'd love to have you over in the gang. Let's start part two right now over at AID.network. I'm going to hop over to Rob Von Gloss, who is in the Europe. And Fun fact, he's outdoors, so I think that they're still required to stay outdoors. How you doing, Rob? Nice to meet you for the first time, bud.
Hey, Mark. I'm doing well. Yeah, just taking an extended break from my bar job.
Bar job?
So bars are just, yeah.
What kind of bar do you work at?
I work at a little pub in Brighton, indoor bar. So we only got to open a couple of weeks ago.
What's the vibe? Do you guys, what do I go there for? Do I go there for music? Do I go there for good looking women? Do I go there for a good cheeseburger? Like, what's the vibe of this pub?
It's, I'd say it's a winter pub. Like, we're all indoors. It's quite dark, quite cozy. So we're not normally very busy at this time of year anyway.
So it's,
and fortunately it's dead right now. So I can sit out here and have a chat with you.
But give me, is there a menu? Like if I, because I don't drink. So if I go to the bar, can I buy something to eat?
So it's a wet lead pub, but we do, there's a little cafe around the corner that make pizzas for us. We've got a pizza oven behind the bar.
Oh, now so. Now we're talking. Hey, Rob, I want to go to England so bad because I fell in love with this place called Pie Minister, where everything was like pot pies. And the thing that I loved most about England, Rob, is that I ate so much good food there that my joke was when I came home that if you stabbed me, gravy would have came out before my blood. Like, you motherfuckers put gravy on everything and I'm here for it. So Rob, tell me real quickly, what was the best thing that you got rid of last year and what was the best thing that you gained?
I'd have to say that my job was probably the best thing that I got rid of. I wasn't fired, I was furloughed, but like just the time that gave to say yes to other opportunities that came up.
That's great.
It's, yeah.
What was the job?
So the bar job. So obviously I've been furlowed for the past year.
Okay, got it.
Reopened now. But yeah, like I've been getting into screen printing, been doing set assistant work on film and photography sets.
Oh, wow.
So it's sort of that time off really enabled me to focus on the freelance hustle.
That's great.
And which has been great.
That was one of the things that I had talked about in the beginning. You know, once we realized that the 2-week shutdown might be slightly longer than 2 weeks, that this would be an opportunity to reprioritize your life. And for you, working at a bar, that's something that was illegal to be open. It forced you to finally have all that time, all those things with you when you were at the bar doing that or on your way to the bar or coming home. You're like, man, I wish I could do this. I wish you could do that. Suddenly a genie, you know, the monkey paw gave you that wish. It just happened to mean that, you know, a couple million people had to die so Rob could have his fucking dream. Thanks a lot, Rob, for killing everybody. But it was a sort of a reshuffling of the world. So you're able to get your, you're working on making your own brand, if I know you correctly. Is that true?
Yep. Yeah, I've been printing t-shirts, picked up some client work as well. So I've been doing some prints for some bands. And there's a guy that does sea shanty tours. He's just started a business. So I've been doing some prints for him. Shout out Homeward Bound Shanties.
There we go. Love a good shanty, whatever the fuck that is. So how far away are we from not having to work at the bar?
I've been talking to my partner and I think over the next couple of months, now that, you know, back on bar shifts, I need to see how much work I have to turn down from those other jobs or how many shifts I have to get covered. You know, maybe in the next 6 months, it's looking pretty good.
That's great. That's great. So if I could answer any other problem, if you looked at right now, obviously you want to get out of your day job. You want to transition over to doing, you know, your, You call it Von Gloss, right? Is that the name of the brand?
Yep.
Is that your real last name?
No. It's okay. A long story.
That's fine. I'm just going to say.
I'll send you a letter.
I was going to say, oh, this guy's fucking wanted from the KGB. I was going to say, though, if it was your last name, like way to go, like Dan Stiles, and he's a very stylish designer. Like it happens every now and again. So tell me what I can help you with. Like, what do you think your biggest obstacle is? If you wanted to ask me one question on like breaking through somebody that's been able to do it several times with my life, where do you feel stuck?
It's just knowing when is the right time to take that leap.
Oh, it's such an easy one. It's such an easy one. And I've talked about this forever. Keep burning the candle at both ends. When you said partner, are you talking about your business partner or where you park your dick?
The second.
Okay. That's the politest way I could say it. So you need to talk to that person and say, I think I got a shot at real happiness. You know, I think I've got a shot at really doing something that makes me feel complete, that challenges me. And I think I have a real shot at being one of the few people in this world that does what they love for a living. And it feels like it's an arm's length from all the work that I did this last year. And you need to just ask that person for the bandwidth and support for you to just go hard and say, I might be a little absent, but this is just to get around the home stretch. And everything that I'm doing, essentially, I'm doing it for us because I want to be happy. I know that I can make more, and I know that I can be a happier person, which makes me a better partner. So you need to have that talk and make sure that they're on board, because if you don't do it that way, it's going to go horrendously. But then the next thing you do is you just burn the candle at both ends. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to set up as much of that freelance work as absolutely possible. You're trying to make the best relationships. You're trying to meet all your deadlines. You're trying to get everybody to know that you're the guy for their band or their brand or their business, and that they can trust you. And Rob, or the way that I've seen this happen is when all of a sudden going to the bar means that you're not going to be able to get jobs done, like book jobs that you have, you know, like you're doing t-shirts for a tour and you have a $5,000 invoice and you go, why am I going to go work tonight for a few hundred dollars and miss out on this $5,000 invoice? And then the best thing that you do is you go over to your partner and you say, here's the deal. This band is paying me $5,000 to do this thing. I have this lined up and this lined up. I have a craft fair booked. I've brought in this much in printing last year. I think that if I quit now and do this, not only will I get rid of the bar job to have this going, but I've got two or three other lily pads that I can leap to after I'm done with this one. And that's the moment that you graduate. That is the moment that you do it, because technically you're going to lose money going to your day job. And the only reason why you would go to your day job is out of fear. And fear isn't enough to keep you there, because you're going to be miserable. You've already fallen out of love with that job. You're not going to fall back in love with it. You know, I know every now and again, people are like, we broke up for 2 years and we got back together and it worked, but that doesn't necessarily work professionally. And so I think that's the way you do it. But I think the step that a lot of people miss, Rob, is that they don't have that relationship with their partner, because essentially, even though they're your life partner, they are your business partner in this transition. And you got to make sure that they're on board with you, because I just made it sound poetic and easy. What you're going to go through is fucking hell. It's hell. And you will doubt yourself. You will hate yourself, and you will need somebody else to help you get back on your feet when you feel like you just lost a round. But if you feel like you're there, if you feel like that the money's there and you're getting better and you're getting more clients, you got to make the jump, man. You're what? I'm going to do a little carnival barker. You're late 20s, early 30s.
Oh, thanks, Mark. 38.
All right. Well, you know, British people all look like a wallet, so it's kind of hard to figure out. But I would say that you're at a great spot to make that leap. You know what I mean? Like you still got enough gas in the tank. Like, I would trade you. I would love to be 38 right now. So you still got enough gas in the tank to make these long nights. But let me forewarn you, you've only got a couple more of those years, bud, because life comes looking for you real soon, real soon. But did that help out, man? Does that make sense? Can you see that sort of aligning with where you're at with things?
Yeah, man, absolutely.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, hey, keep showing up on Tuesdays when you can. Keep us in the loop and keep showing up with a fucking problem, because I'll always try to figure out an answer, even if I have to lie to tell it to you. All right.
Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, thank you, man. I appreciate you being part of the family. All right, I'm going
to
hop over.
I need to get back to the bar, Jones.
Yeah. Get over there. Go handle those drunks for me. Later, bud. All right, I'm going to talk to my friend Andrew in Brooklyn, who I think is hiding from the law because he's so silhouetted out. Andrew, what's up, man?
What's going on, sir?
This guy designs architectural environments for a living, can't make a green screen setup to save his life.
Not one. I tried it and I gave up. So now it's just all this.
Hey, I'll tell you what. I couldn't put a hammer in a nail. I couldn't put a nail into a board in the real world, but look at my virtual setup. So we're just going in opposite directions. Andrew, real quick before you hit me up with whatever's going on personally for you, just let everybody know, WIFP, what was the best thing that you got rid of and what's the best thing that you gained from 2020.
Oh my God.
You motherfucker, we've been going over this for 54 minutes now, and you act like I just surprised you.
So, no, it's a big deal. That's why I'm saying, oh my God.
Oh, okay,
so
good,
I got rid of social media.
And congratulations.
Specifically Facebook. So I probably took way too long to get on the Instagram bandwagon.
Hey, do me a favor real quick. Keep your head still because you're trailing off. You got a lot of compression on your microphone, and we're losing the last little bit of your sentences there.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, there we go.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so I gave up Facebook completely because, you know, everything that was going on between the politics and Corona and, you know, you name it, just even like the people who are on my social media streams.
Yeah,
like the echo chamber and everything like that. It was just too much. So
yeah, I feel you.
I kind of dwindled it down throughout the year.
Yeah,
and then finally, like once the elections came, I was just like done. Cut it, just cold turkey, just done. And that's been like my biggest thing to get rid of, and also the greatest thing is that I've just been trying to curate what is making me happy throughout like the last year, like and trying to like kind of hold on to that and establish that, you know, being a little bit more active with the COT, being just kind of like jumping ship from Facebook completely. Just like I don't even look at it.
Yeah.
So now it's just like whatever I have on Instagram or Reddit is very specifically curated to like what makes me happy, right? And what I want to see. I want to see like all the cool shit that everybody's making, like everybody, you know, what they're doing, the happenings and stuff like that. I don't want to deal with anything else, you know, outside of that bubble, because it's not worth it.
Well, let me start here with you, because I agree with you on the Facebook thing. When the 2016 election happened, I was already really out of love with Facebook. But then the arrogance of them not taking any fault for what happened with the election and all the bots and basically poisoning the well, the arrogance from them really, really made me hate them. But I do have a lot of passwords logged in through Facebook, so I didn't completely delete it. But I just don't go there anymore. And in fact, I remember telling Beth, I'm like, yeah, like I every now and again you get tricked and you have to go there to like toggle something to get it going. But I haven't I still have like the old timey fucking mustache and I wear glasses on Facebook. I've had fucking, you know, $5,000 surgery put into my right eyeball. I haven't had that fucking stupid mustache for years now. Like, I don't even know. Like, I look like a carnival barker over there instead of the sunburnt scumbag that I look like now, high and tight forever. So I went over there and I just looked at, you know, like there's like, you know, 50 people want to be your friend or, you know, whatever outrageous number. And I was like kind of just looking around and I saw that an ex-girlfriend left a video or no, an audio message. And Beth was like, what did she say? I'm like, I don't know. She's like, how did you not push play? I'm like, what good could possibly come out of hitting play on that? And that has been Facebook for me ever since 2016. And every year it compounds, the interest compounds of what good comes out of going over there when their algorithms are designed to anger you, to frustrate you, to you know, if somebody says, congratulations, we're having a baby, that skyrockets. But also if somebody goes on there denying something, that skyrockets. Any nice friendly news in between of new baby or new Holocaust, nobody gets to see it. And I have to say, I've been thinking about this a lot lately. Do you think, because you're a smart guy, do you think the best thing that TikTok did is they said, we're going to make a new platform. YouTube videos are long. We're going to make short videos. But when we look at our competition, it's so hard to grow on Instagram. It's so hard to grow an audience on anything that Facebook owns. And then once you do build an audience, it's hard to get out to your audience. I think the smartest thing TikTok did is they're like, we're going to make a platform that where if you put a decent amount of work into it, we're going to reward you with instant growth. Because my big problem with Instagram has been I can't justify fitting it into a very, very busy life. Because I'm not going to shoot free videos for reels. I'm not going to load up my stories all day with quirky little segments and little fun things to do. You know, I'm not going to try to make original content for my feed. Like Instagram having four different ways they want you to feed it, that's four too many, really. You know, I should be able to post who's on the show this day, and 18,000 people should be able, in a chronological order, to scroll by and be like, nah, I don't feel like listening. You know, like, that's the way that it should work. I shouldn't have to figure out, like, don't mention that I got